Hello, everybody, and welcome to Forbes Comic News, episode 346. I'm one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-hoster, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
What's up? Nothing much. Just chilling. Saw Godzilla this weekend. I'm going to talk about that. I was really happy I got to see that.
I unfortunately didn't. Things got busy.
Yeah, it was crazy how much, like word of mouth hype that movie got, because like when I first bought the tickets, there was nobody in the theater, and then like when I went, it was packed.
I was reading a lot about it. It's supposed to be, you're gonna talk about it a little bit.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it is very good. We do have an interview today. David Crispino, Tony Gregory, gonna talk about their Kickstarter project.
Yeah, looking like it's gonna be the last interview of the year. Everybody
yeah.
with us knows we kind of take December off from interviews. So why not finish it with a Christmas comic?
Yeah, I think this one's very fitting for this year. Taff Sturgeon, Holiday in the Stars. It's like a sci-fi Christmas graphic novel that looks absolutely fantastic. So perfect time of year to do this. Yeah, for some behind the scenes stuff, Chris just sent me the link to the Kickstarter. And I thought he was sending it to me to back it because it's absolutely something I would read. And then he was like, no, this is the interview. And I'm like, oh, shit. Well, even better. So,
awesome.
That it looks wild. That's like right up my alley. And I do like find the need to read some like festive comics around this time of year.
There's a bunch coming out next week, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch.
Yeah, they got the Batman holiday when we got the Creepshow holiday special. I didn't even know that was coming out. So
And Nightmares holiday special.
Yeah, Stuff and Nightmares. You know, it's like there's like that really fine niche of stuff I like to read. It's like, okay, I like horror. I really like horror anthologies. And I really like Christmas horror anthologies. I don't know if we can get any more specific there, but... and there's quite a few coming out next week, so
yeah.
I'm pretty happy about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess we'll just jump into it because we got some shit to talk about, Chris.
We do.
TV news, Fallout trailer. You probably being the bigger Fallout fan than me, I played Fallout, one of them. Definitely played the one that took place in Boston.
Four.
That's the one that, yeah. The TV show trailer dropped kind of out of nowhere. I forgot this was even a thing. I will say, I mean, not knowing much about like the universe and stuff, I think it, I mean, we get to see some stuff from the game, like the ghoul and the armor and everything. I think having the comedic side of it with like really gory shots kind of makes sense from the tone of the game, right? I would think. Yeah. We get to see some weird creatures, which is nice.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not really a huge Fallout guy, but I did play 3 and I did play New Vegas, and they're fun enough. I like Bethesda style games. We talked about Starfield a few months back when I was playing it, but I always like the world here, that 50s aesthetic,
yeah,
like a futuristic bent.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
Yeah, so everything I saw there looked fine. I'm sure like hardcore Fallout fans will find something wrong with it, but.
Well, it is the creator of Westworld, so a lot of the shots look really good. A lot better than I thought they would.
Yeah, I probably got more of a budget for this one, too, being Amazon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it looks cool. I'll check it out. That trailer sold me. I'm like, okay, I'll see what we got.
And I think, honestly, the way they went about it, they're like, oh, shit, we should just get the Westworld team on this, because that if that's the tone they're going with, like you said, like dystopian. And, well, I guess Westworld being dystopian, but like, you know, taking place in the future, I guess, outside of another world. But
it's also, I mean, Fallout has a bunch of different genres.
Yeah, that's true.
But
yeah,
one of the big ones is like a Western. So,
right. It looks interesting. Sense. I'm going to watch it for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And then with that, well, you said when you saw the trailer, for everybody that does watch the trailer, it says, from the studio that brought you The Boys and free 2-day shipping. I thought that was kind of hilarious.
I thought it was pretty lame, but
it's like an AI created trailer. Honestly, they're like way too self-aware.
Yeah.
But Amazon did also release a trailer for The Boys season 4.
It did indeed. And it's gory.
It's gory. And, at one point, I think A-Train's holding a jar of pubes at some point. So
yeah, Negan shows up. I mean, Jeffrey Dean Morgan shows
yeah,
up.
Yeah, Jeffrey Dean Morgan shows up. Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's excited for this. And I hopefully when they say release soon, I think like in the new year, maybe January ish.
I hope. So. I mean, they say soon, so I'm hoping within quarter one. Yeah. Or so.
It
looks phenomenal. I like the whole we're doing Starlight versus Homelander thing.
And, yeah, I think that's cool.
Homelander still seems to be crazy as fucking batshit. We both love this show. We both really enjoyed Gen V, so mm-hmm. I'm kind of excited to see how they tie that into it. And I don't know really what to say other than it looks awesome and I love this series, so of course I'm here for season 4.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what I found out? Jack Quaid that plays Huey
mm-hmm.
is actually Meg Ryan's son.
Really?
Yeah, I like something popped up in my either my reels or like TikTok where it was like an interview where they're like, "Do you think Jack Quaid is like just a like buffed up actor because his mom is Meg Ryan?" Like Meg Ryan was talking about how like he's getting shit for that, and I was like, "Wait, what?" And then she's his mom, and I'm like, "Man, it's crazy when you go to Hollywood, you see like these degrees of like relatives that are all in the industry. It's really like not like." Well, it's then, so hard to get in there.
Well, and then his dad's Dennis Quaid, so.
Yeah, right. I didn't even realize last name of Quaid. Yeah, Dennis Quaid, Meg Ryan's son. Like, come on.
I mean, that should make sense. Right. I get it. Like, it's funny, like, nowadays we get, like, kind of upset about that stuff. But, like, if you think about it back, like, if we go back hundreds of years and whatnot, like, If you know, you, Mike, were the fucking blacksmith in town, your kid was going to be trained to be the blacksmith.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah.
It makes sense that the kid wants to do. Especially when it's something to look up to. Like, yeah. No offense to my father. My father is a great man who did very well, and I love him to death. But, like, my father was a factory worker. Like, and so his whole thing was, like, don't do this.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're surrounded by it all the time, and it takes quite a bit of money. I would say to get into acting, you need a lot of upfront income to like support yourself while you're doing stupid shit. So,
or fucking
know somebody,
just balls of steel to fucking punch through the system. Yeah.
Yeah. But either way, I just think it's hilarious because I had no idea. I always love finding that out, like who's related to who.
Yeah, it makes. I mean, we're seeing that more and more. I mean, you're watching that Godzilla show, and I already forgot his name, but he's
the Russell, son of somebody. Yeah, Kurt Russell's son is playing him. That's kind of weird. No new episodes for that, and no new episode for Invincible this week, right? Weird.
Yeah, apparently it's a mid-season break. I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, okay, they're just conveniently using Christmas time for that.
I was literally watching. Speaking of Hollywood. I was rewatching Entourage and I was like, oh yeah, like I should probably watch Invincible. So I like turned it off and went to Amazon Prime. Like, there's no Invincible.
Yeah. Yeah. I was disappointed.
Back too. To Entourage.
Speaking of Entourage, I saw the Aquaman trailer at the theater on the big screen. I'm like, man, all I could really think about is Entourage. Every time I see Aquaman.
How DC didn't give that guy a fucking cameo in Aquaman. Like, come on. Make him like a fucking random dude in the background. He deserves it. Right. He was... Entourage was repping fucking Aquaman before like anybody was.
Yeah, nobody was talking about it. That was the joke. Like, you led with Aquaman.
Yeah.
So, movie news. It seems for now that Marvel Studios will move forward with Kang as their big bad for the phase MCU. It was reported this week that the mind behind the Loki series and writer of Multiverse of Madness, upcoming Avengers Secret Wars, Michael Waldron, has signed on for the writer of Avengers Kang Dynasty. I think that's cool. This guy's like building his way up to like, you know, starts with the Loki and then he goes into Multiverse of Madness, which is wild. Now we're getting Secret Wars and then Kang Dynasty. I think that's awesome. So good for him.
Yeah, good for him. And so I was reading about him too.
Yeah.
He also was a writer for like early Rick and Morty too.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He's done a bunch of cool stuff. Good for him for working his way up. I don't know much else to say about that, but as far as the whole Kang of it all.
Yeah.
I thought from the very start this was the way to go. Mm-hmm. Even if so, even if Majors is guilty and did all these things and all this shit, just recast him.
Right. Yeah.
If you take 2 seconds, like let's say they do a few more movies and then they get the Kang Dynasty and he ends up in jail. You know, just
whatever. For instance. Yeah.
Then at the beginning of Kang Dynasty, you just start the movie without somebody being like, "What up, Kang? Hey, how's it going, man?" And you move on with the fucking movie, and we all know it's Kang. Like, it doesn't take that much.
Yeah,
guys.
It's not that hard. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, for multiple reasons, I hope he's innocent because he's an amazing actor. And I just, nobody wants anybody to have done these terrible things. But
I think that, I think for the time being, they told him to go to a cave and not come out for a while because we haven't heard shit since.
He's surrounded by Disney PR right now. Like,
yeah, they're like putting up armor.
Dude, it's like fucking Marines.
Yeah.
Just like that, no PR. Like, yeah. Listen, you ain't fucking leaving this house.
Yeah, he's in like a black box somewhere right now.
Mickey's in the background.
Yeah. Like in South Park. You don't fuck with the mouse. Oh. It's like beating the shit out of him. Oh, that should be the, at the end of all the Marvel movies, the main villain is Mickey Mouse. at the end of the universe, they just find him.
Dude, it's so funny. Did you play that game, Lies of P?
No, I'm waiting for it to go on sale, though, because it seems like something I would enjoy.
Okay, from what I heard it is, and I'm not going to spoil the ending, but there's a surprise ending
okay.
and all this stuff. And a podcast I listened to, they got into a shitload of trouble because one of the guys made a joke that at the end, that the final boss sequence was you fighting Walt Disney.
Oh, man.
And people took a, oh, you can't believe. And he just came on the next show. Like, you guys actually thought that you fought Walt Disney at the end? Like, are you fucking stupid?
Yeah, like, what the hell? Oh, my God. Yeah, it's like Soulsborne based around Disney, or not Disney, sorry, Pinocchio.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see what you think of the ending, though. I won't play it because I'm a noob, but
I'm playing through. I am playing through Lords of the Fallen right now, the new one. I'm loving it. About 20 something hours in. Very cool.
Friend gave me Spider-Man sitting on my counter for about 2 weeks now.
Oh, the second one?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Furiosa trailer came out, which is a surprise. I forgot this was even a thing happening. Because it's been almost 10 years since the last Mad Max movie and last time George Miller has directed anything. I think he just like went into the desert for another 10 years and comes out with a movie. It's like Moses or some shit.
That's what I've heard he does. He like they take like a year or two to film because everything's practical.
Yeah, which you can see in the trailer. I mean, it looks exciting.
Mm-hmm.
The sets are all practical. Liam Hemsworth is in it, and I think it's hilarious.
No, Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, it is Chris Hemsworth. Yeah. Okay. He has his like Thor cape.
That's why that? I saw the name Chris Hemsworth come up. I'm like, oh, that's because I thought he looked familiar.
Yeah.
And then literally the next sequence after that, after they show his name, is him with the cape. And I was like, oh, they put him in the Thor cape.
Yeah. And he like looks like the Thor. I mean, he's got the beard and shit, but him being the villain is going to be interesting. Like him in a villain role. I think that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah. And the sequences you see of him in there, like he looks kind of menacing. So
yeah.
It's going to take a lot, but
yeah. I really enjoyed the first one. I think I went and saw it at the theater like 8 times just because of how much fun it was to watch in a movie theater.
I mean, I love the Mad Max universe, back to the Gibson movies. And that new one, I was so excited people were reinvigorated by it because it's such a good franchise.
Yep.
Fuck, I even played the video game.
I forgot about the video game.
Yeah. I think my only issue here, we talked about it off air a little bit, but like they changed, I understand why, but like they changed actresses for Furiosa.
Yeah.
And who played Furiosa in the original?
Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron is a very particular actress where like, she just oozes badass.
Yeah, she was super badass.
And she has like, I don't know, she has this thing to her that she's going to be tough to replace. And this new actress, I haven't seen her in anything other than the Mario movie.
Yeah.
She, for that's, one.
That's just for Chris's taste, everybody. She's been in like a
ton of shit, yeah.
Almost everything on Netflix she gets
If it doesn't have a superhero in it, I don't watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's like the only thing she hasn't done yet.
I think the two big things here is like her look is so drastically different from Charlize.
Right.
That was like off-putting at first. And then I want to see like how she pulls off the character, because the character is Charlize at this point. Like you gotta you gotta either do better or something. But I'll definitely go see it. Like those are me picking at things that I'm like, oh, that stands out, but it doesn't mean the movie won't be good or anything. Just
I'm just like, I just love the environment of those movies.
Yeah, listen, she could be awful. She could be the worst, and I would probably still have fun with that movie.
I'm just like watching the background of all the different cars and shit.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, like those movies. Listen, Mel Gibson, I don't know if you know this, Mike, but not a really great actor.
No, he's not.
He just like does badass things every once in a while.
Right, he just grunts and shoots people.
You will not take our freedom. No. So like those movies aren't really built around like these amazing act. They're built around these set pieces and this like crazy fucking world that people are like, what is this? So that's the star of the movie is the cars and the arenas and the action sequences. So that's what's got to be pulled off more than anything. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to it though.
No, I'm excited for it. More of that. And now I have to rewatch Mad Max because it's been a while. Fury Road, that is. Okay.
I gotta start from the beginning, Mike.
Yeah, all the way at the beginning with Toe Cutter. I'm a huge Godzilla fan, so I went and saw Godzilla Minus One this weekend. It lived up to the hype. I think it's sitting at like 98% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, which is insane. Probably one of my favorite Godzilla movies. It was kind of low budget for a Godzilla film, so it's really awesome to see that it's doing well.
To be fair, it's a Toho movie too, so they're usually low budget compared to what we do
here. Yeah, and I was surprised to see some stuff like the early, like we see so this takes place in the 40s, like when Japan, there's some people in Japan that first discover Godzilla, and it is subtitled, so like I did notice some like younger people walked out of the movie about 20 minutes in realizing, oh shit, I have to read subtitles the whole time. I will say this is how you do human characters, because Legendary doesn't do it this way, and this movie really blends the ties of like Godzilla to the nuclear bombing of Japan. So it like takes place right at the end of the war, and the main character is a kamikaze pilot, but he lies and says that his plane is broken, so he ends up on this island where they're fixing his plane. They're like, dude, your plane's not broken. And that's where Godzilla first appears. And he has like PTSD and stuff. So throughout the movie, like basically, I mean, he comes back home, but like all of his home is wiped out from the war. So like he's battling with like, he was supposed to be a kamikaze pilot, but he came back. People knew he was a kamikaze pilot. So now he's being like shunned by the community. And then like it goes throughout a few years go by, and then Godzilla shows up again. After he sees him like really early on, and then it's kind of like the fight with Godzilla, but they do a few good things. Like they focus on this guy and how like depressing and sad his life is, because like it shouldn't be a hopeful story or a fun story, because literally your city is being destroyed by this giant monster. So there's a lot of like holy shit moments of like Godzilla is an unstoppable force and these people on the ground can do nothing. Literally, it's like just laying waste to everything. They don't try to nuke him in this movie, which is great. They do a sizzle reel where they're like, I think it shows like the US tried to nuke him, and then they do away with it. Like, okay, that's now Godzilla's powered up. But they have like I'm not gonna spoil too much, but the whole like plan revolves around science, and I love it because it for the 40s, it's like, how can we utilize like what we know about how Godzilla floats on the water. So they talk about that. Like, how does Godzilla, you know, float on the water so much compared to like, he weighs like, you know, fucking 1500 tons. How does he stay afloat? And then the human connections are really good. The characters are all really cool. There's these ties to Japan and how they lied to a lot of their citizens about like being in the war, like making them be kamikaze pilots when most of them realize the war was over soon anyways. So like, why would I be a kamikaze pilot if I know we're about to lose the war? So a lot of stuff like that. And like, US won't get involved because there's like tensions with Russia because that's still happening. Yeah, really, really great freaking movie. I mean, I was like, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll be like, holy shit, at some of these action moments. And then like, by the time I realized it was over, I was like, holy shit, that was such a wild run. Godzilla looks really good too, the way they designed him. Yeah, I was super happy with the film.
So two quick things. One, I'm sorry, I if anyone noticed, I giggled when Mike was talking about kamikaze pilots because I started thinking about the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode.
Yes.
So I wasn't laughing at kamikaze pilots. I just want to make that clear.
yeah, not laughing at the kamikaze
pilots. No, I was just thinking about that episode. Does this feel like a prequel or a reboot to you?
It's a reboot for sure. So this is, that's another thing. If anybody's like worried about what movies do what, this is a complete like retelling. And I believe they did that like minus one of like, this is the complete origin. Nothing else. Like Shin Godzilla is separate from this. Takes place in the 40s.
So you think Toho is going to start a new, assuming this is successful, which sounds like it is, they're going to start a whole new line of Godzilla
movies. I think so. I don't see how they don't after this. And there is like a little teaser.
It's been long enough where I think that's a great idea, personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. I was just looking at it's playing. So it is playing in my local theater all week. Only one showing every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to go see it at some point.
Nice.
I really wanted to, but yeah, like I said, things got so fucking busy last weekend.
Holy shit, it's terrifying. I just turned to the right and the cat is like sitting there staring at me. it was just like I like looked over to the right and she's like in my face.
Mine's outside right now and he's been so pissed off at me because I have not been home the past 3-4 days. And when I do get home, he is at the door, just like looking at me like, where the fuck you been, motherfucker? Yeah,
what are you doing? Where do you and think you're going?
The second I sit down, he's on me.
Nice. Greedo is such a sweet boy.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend it, Chris. And I will say I did notice that. Like, I looked at some theaters around here earlier in the week, and some of them didn't have their showings posted on Saturday, and I almost think they were waiting to see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it did well, and then I saw that they added showings on Saturdays, like some of the theaters around here.
My local one did, because I have like I think we discussed before, I have a like locally owned one that like a family here in town owns. They did like 3 or 4 showings Friday, Saturday, and I believe today.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the week, it goes to one. And then the Regal Theater that's near me. So first off, Mike, do you have a Regal Theater near you?
That's what I went to, yeah, Regal.
So ours, I'm assuming yours does too, but ours now serves beer?
Some of them do. I don't think the one here does.
And that's the one thing that get me to abandon my fucking local theater is like, I can get beer while I'm here.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll definitely go to the local and probably Friday or Saturday and see it because it's a later showing.
Yeah. It was really good. Highly recommend it. It was awesome to have a new Godzilla movie. Probably one of my favorite ones. But then, dude, so much Godzilla news. And then we got the poster for Godzilla versus Kong. I don't know if you saw that. I forgot to talk about it, but...
Yeah, there's like 3 of them.
Yeah. So...
It's like the handprint with the face.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty excited for that. But all right. Pretty excited.
Did you notice more Godzilla news?
Yeah.
This is actually comic related, but more Godzilla news. So those Roar covers were delayed.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed, and we get an email from my local shop, everybody. And that email in there was the Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong Roar variant is coming Wednesday.
Or finally.
Tuesday, DC. Finally. Fucking
DC. Yeah, changing up the schedule.
So if anyone's looking for that, apparently it's hitting shops Tuesday, finally.
We'll see. I'll believe it when they hit that.
You'll believe it when I come on the show and I open it up.
It's not going to work.
I'll get the busted one.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We're going to jump to this interview with David and Tony, and we'll see you on the other side.
Oh, so Tony,
Yeah.
Grigori.
Grigori, yes. Like the monks.
Grigori. And David Crispino.
Crispino, you nailed it.
Oh, man.
I'm getting you got to go like this when you say the name, though.
Crispino.
Yeah. I did a
Manja boys.
Yeah, I did a ancestry thing a little while ago, and my, you know, as I was growing up, it was always like, we're Italian, we're 100% Italian, you're Italian, you're half, yeah. You know, and it's just like, we're more Greek than Italian, and I'm That's more awesome. Scottish than Italian.
Wow.
It's like,
I'm half Greek, half Italian. My mom was Greek.
All That's my awesome. Parents are like fresh off the boat, immigrants, and I'm just full like Axis of Evil background. Like I'm Italian, German. Yeah, Fantastic. Like it's
complete Fantastic. Supervillain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why you love the Red Skull, right? Is that why?
And Serpentor.
Yeah.
Big Serpentor fan.
Yeah, huge Serpentor. Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure I've told you this, Mike, right. But our original last name is the most supervillain last name ever, but it got changed when my grandfather came to America.
Yeah.
What was it? It was Von Rundstedt.
Oh my
yeah,
god.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, you're a supervillain for sure. What
I'm one PhD away, man.
Yeah. Wow. You could have been Dr. Doom, man. What the hell? What are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys.
All right, let's do this.
Okay. That was the intro there, Chris. I don't think we need to run an intro after that. What? Yeah. If you want to introduce them, you can. I'll allow it. Go ahead.
All right, everybody. We'll see how much of that I actually keep. All right, everybody. We've got two very special guests for everybody here. Everybody, please welcome to the show David Crispino and Tony Grigori.
Nice. Good job. Hey, guys. Thanks for being here. Chris got
Thanks
to,
for having us.
Chris got to tap into his Italian side of his Axis of Evil and try to pronounce the names. But it's funny. So quick story about the project we're going to talk about. Chris sent me a late night text, as he usually does. And it was
naughtier than this one.
Yeah, it was. It was a link to Taft Sturgeon. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. I'm going to go back it right now. And then like a little time went by. And he's like, no, that's the interview for Sunday. And I was like, oh, even better. I was like, this looks like something I would love. So I can't wait to talk about that today. Because it's your first time here, we have to do the painful thing of putting you through the gauntlet and asking your origin stories of comics.
That's fine.
So whoever wants to go first, Dave or Tony, or at the same time, go ahead. Give us the lowdown.
Speak over each other like...
Yeah, yeah.
Alternate words.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, just kill everybody's ears. It'd be great.
What is happening?
Oompa Loompa style or something.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll go. Do you want, like... We taught like timeline.
Yeah, I would say okay. So like,
of me
yeah, to... yeah. So where did you start as far as how you got involved in comics, and then like how did Taft Sturgeon come about with you guys?
I would like to hear the story of conception. Let's go there.
Okay, you could do that. Chris, hey, whoever wants to hear what I mean, Chris is probably a better judge of our listeners. So.
Oh my! I think my dad liked my mom a lot.
All right, okay. We're getting into it, guys. Enough.
So yeah, I was a retailer. Well, first I was a reader, longtime reader. Dug it. Got into it at an early age. Probably learned to read around that time with comics. Mm-hmm. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was my go-to for a while, and then as I got older, my dad used to take us to the Price Club. This is a story that I always tell. It's like,
yeah,
my dad took us to Price Club, which is like a buyer's club, much like a Costco or anything mm-hmm. like that. You could get like packs of 20 or 30 comics. He would buy them all the time every time we went. And so that's when I really fell in love with comics. And then fast forward, graduate high school, get back into comics because I was like into Magic the Gathering and girls, and then mm-hmm. just girls. And then got the job, ended up working with somebody whose wife worked at Diamond Comic Distributors. And I ended up getting Earth X and Kingdom Come. It was like, just came from free for the people, for mm-hmm. the workers. And so I was like, is this what is happening in comics now? Like I hadn't been reading in a while.
Right.
And so I was like already floored. Like I was like, holy shit, this is like, you know, all the familiar themes, all the familiar people, blah, 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 blah. Very adult, super excited. And then I was just like, I gotta find a shop. So I found a shop, ended up becoming a retailer, moved to Montana, became a retailer, owned a shop for 3 years, wow. Moved back to Baltimore, became a manager at the shop that I started going to when I started getting back into comics, which is Collector's Corner. And I managed there for like 4 or so years.
Wow.
And in that time, went to conventions, tried to promote the store as much as possible, tried to get store signings and all those kind of things along the way. Met Joe Keating and Layla Del Duca. They became fast friends with myself. I was in DC for a signing for Shudder, and I was talking to Layla, and like we were having dinner. I was like, you know, I've got some ideas. Do you know anybody? Do you have anybody that you suggest me working with? And she was like, of course. Like, I've got this guy Tony Grigori. He's like one of the nicest guys. I think you'll really get along with him. I'll get you guys together. And the funny thing is that like ships passing in the night, like I was living in Montana before Tony got there, and then Tony went there, but Tony also lived in Towson, Baltimore while I was living over here, and then he moved to Florida. So we had always kind of like doing this throughout our life.
Okay.
And
we might be related.
We might be related. it's
man, even, that would like, be fun. Follow each other around the world or around the US at least.
Yeah. So that's how I met Tony. And then Tony and I have been making comics for close to 10 years now. Probably a comic a year of various sizes and genres. And then I pass it to my tag team partner here.
Yeah, that was a good, nice setup for him, Tony. So Tony, where did it start for you? Conception. No, I'm just kidding.
Conception. Well, my mother was a bartender at this bar in Dewey Beach. My father was a boat captain, and he walked in and noticed her, and went in every day for about
10 weeks. Real.
This is real.
To go out with him. This is real. Real. Yeah.
Holy shit! Is your dad Aquaman?
he was
King Trident or something.
He did live on a boat. He was a boat captain. So
that's awesome. That's amazing.
So and then they got married and my mom was pregnant with me, and they moved down to Florida, and I was born in West Palm Beach, Florida, and grew up down there in South Florida till I was in my 30s. When I was a little kid, I was always into comics. I drew comics before I could read. I was drawing dinosaur comics. I would staple them together.
That's awesome.
And my mom saved them. I still have a few of them in storage. And then my dad taught me how to read through like those late 70s, early 80s Batman comics. I was born in 76.
Yep.
So I was reading like, you know, it was the Jim Aparo, Mike Barr, that stuff, Neil Adams, that sort of stuff. I was always into comics. Through high school, I was drawing all the time. I wanted to make comics. Even in high school, it was like during the Image boom. And me and my buddy Josh would make comics and not tell anybody, because we were in high school, and back then you didn't share that
with people.
Yeah. Even during the Image boom, it still wasn't that cool. You know, even Rob Liefeld had a jeans commercial. Like,
oh my God.
Plus I was playing sports and stuff. I played football for a couple of years before I just realized I was not going to be any good at that. Mm-hmm. And I always drew. And in high school, I was like voted most, quote unquote, most artistic. But then when I graduated high school, I was in South Florida, and I kind of went on a journey, so to speak, because it was the 90s, and there was I was working in nightclubs and bars, so you can imagine the trouble I got into and the things I did. So it was around mid-2000s. I was working at this nightclub on Fort Lauderdale Beach, and there was a Fort Lauderdale Art Institute like down the street, and I was thinking about what to do with my life, and I hadn't drawn since I was in high school. And this girl I was dating, she was a writer. She wanted to be she was into creative writing, and she got me thinking creatively again and got me thinking about like what I want to do with the rest of my life. Like, I all respect to bartenders, but I didn't want to be like the 40-year-old country club bartender in like Boca Raton or something, you know? So I was like, the only thing I know how to do besides like make drinks and run a bar is like draw. And I was always good at it. And I was looking at these kids' portfolios who I worked with, because they all went to school at this art institute. I was like 23, 24, 25 maybe at the time. And I'm looking at their work, and I was like getting cocky. I'm like, damn, I'm better than these kids. And I haven't done them. since like in a decade almost. Yeah. So I just picked up the pencil, started drawing again. I got the bug, and then enrolled at the Art Institute, which was probably a bad idea because I still have debt to this day, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
And I started drawing again. I made an independent indie comic with my girlfriend at the time's brother, who was a writer as well. And we made this comic, and it got picked up by an indie publisher in South Florida, and he took it to San Diego Comic-Con because he was tabling. And then I just decided to move to San Diego. And I moved to San Diego in like 2007 and did the con and then stayed there for like 4 years or so and did the con every year and tried to, you know, break into comics while I was bartending still in like downtown San Diego with like Gas Lamp and stuff like that and on the beach. And then, like, you know, life took me back and forth and went to Florida for a bit and then ended up in Boulder. And then I was still trying to break into comics. And I was working with this guy, Tim Daniel, who works for Vault and writes comics for like Boom and
he seems to come up quite a bit in our interviews.
He lives here in Missoula, and we became good friends. He came out to San Diego and we became really tight. Yeah. And he's like, man, you should try Missoula. It's really cheap. At the time, it was really cheap. Mm-hmm. There's a really cool arts community, and you can kind of like get by without having a car. It's like a walkable city. It's tucked away in the mountains. I was in Boulder at the time, and it was expensive. And I was living up above Boulder, like 10,000 feet up in like near Nederland. Mm-hmm. And I was having to drive down through the pass to get to work on Pearl Street like every night because I was still bartending because it was so expensive. I couldn't afford to live off of just comics.
Oh, yeah.
And so my lease was up, and it was just me and my dog. And I was like, fuck it, I'll just move to Missoula. And I did, and I loved it. And I've been here over a decade, 11 years. And once I moved here, and I stayed with Tim for like a couple of weeks before I found a place here. And then as soon as I moved here, I started getting better gigs.
That's cool.
I was able to support myself with just drawing comics. So I've been full-time for over a decade now.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Tim Daniel, man. Like, we just had the guys from Invader Comics on last week, and we were talking to him too because he's got some books there and they, you know, mm-hmm. good friends with him and stuff. But
yeah
that's cool. And then, I mean, we talked about you guys working, you and Dave working together from Dave's story. But we're going to talk about Taff Sturgeon, Holiday and the Stars, but that character was a thing before this Kickstarter, right?
Yes.
So is that something you guys just came up with and did some stories for? Or where did that come about?
I came about through Layla and Joe. They were doing Shudder, Joe Keating and Layla Daduka. They were doing Shudder for Image, and they offered us, the two of us, because David and I had been working together for a couple of years at that point, and we had done The Adversary, which was a 30-page one-shot, which was like a sword and sorcery book. Mm-hmm. We did Ancient Noise, I think, at that point, like issue one or two.
Yeah, one or two.
And then Malediction of Maxwell Fitzsimmons, which was a Lovecraft story that we did, which is like a almost 40-page one-shot.
Okay.
No, that was like, it was like 20 pages.
20 pages?
Yeah, it felt like 40 pages again.
it was brisk. But yeah, so they offered us five to seven pages in the back of each issue of Shudder to tell a little story. So Dave and I were like, well, how many issues do we get? And they're like, oh, like seven. So yeah, we're like, damn, that's like 30 some pages. So we got to come up with a story. And I was like digging on like late 70s sci-fi, which was like Logan's Run and like Planet of the Apes type stuff. And David and Spaceman Spiff, I was reading Calvin and Hobbes again. And David and I were talking about Uncle Buck, which is like a favorite both of ours. David loves John Candy, and so do I. We're like, well, how about we just combine all those things and make a story? And we made this story about this guy who was an intergalactic agent who works for intergalactic child protective services. He goes around the galaxy and helps children of different like alien species and whatnot. And that's how it started. The name was like, I was thinking, I came up with a name because we were struggling with a name for it. And I was just thinking sturgeon because of fish.
Yeah.
Chinese characters, I always love the fish and bowl and stuff like that.
Yep. Yep.
And then Taft, I just think William Taft, the president, and he's like a husky guy. So it just kind of felt natural.
I think it's a solid name. Taft Sturgeon is like a solid like adventurer hero name.
It sounds like a 70s action sci-fi movie name too. Yeah,
Taft Sturgeon.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's great.
Holiday in the Stars, starring Taff Sturgeon.
Yeah, it works. It definitely works. I saw the Kickstarter, Taff Sturgeon, Holiday in the Stars, and I was talking to Chris about this a little bit. Like, obviously around Christmas time, I like to read more holiday stuff. That being said, it's on Kickstarter during the holiday season, which is amazing. What are you guys doing with this story? Obviously, it's a sci-fi holiday story, so like it's a full length graphic novel, though there's quite a bit of content here, right? So what is the story you're telling?
So I got this little, I got a blurb already written.
Like, oh, really? Oh, you have something prepared? That's
more than it's like have. Real quick. It's like real quick. So it's like, okay.
It's blank meets blank.
Yeah. High concept. Premise Beach. Come with us to Premise Beach where we mash things together for you.
Yeah.
So it's when a conniving robotics tycoon tries to replace the beloved detective Taft Sturgeon with AI-powered robots. He inadvertently sends Taft on a magical Christmas journey to the North Pole where he teams up with Santa and Mrs. Claus to save the holiday season. Or what if John Candy starred in a cosmic Christmas odyssey?
Uncle Buck Rogers.
Uncle Buck Rogers. I love
so, that. Yeah, nice. So,
yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to tell it's like we say it's Christmas season, like because Santa doesn't need saving. Christmas doesn't need saving. Because right. like these are ideas and concepts that are bigger than we are, and these are things that we can't possibly like destroy in any sort of way. It's a
right.
It's a living, breathing concept, and we try to explore that as well in Taft Sturgeon by like getting weird with these like kind of like folk sci-fi, where you talk about like how the North Pole is like almost like the center of the universe, and it's and mm-hmm. Mrs. and Santa Claus are like these avatars of goodwill and prosperity and these kind of things. So it's like cool. we try to like dig on Jack Kirby type concepts as far as like New Gods and 2000 when he yeah. did 2001 Space Odyssey and like right. that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So it's like mostly how the idea of Christmas affects other people. So, you have a conniving capitalistic tycoon because he's trying to like make a buck. He's trying to like exploit the holiday season. And right. then you have the opposite side. You have Taft Sturgeon who's like, no, he's trying to be kind and he's trying to be giving and caring. And like, mm-hmm. he's doing his best so that other people can aspire to be like him, much like Superman in that kind of aspects as well.
Yep. Yep. That's very cool. And I like the idea of like the, like you said, the higher beings or like new God versions of Santa and mm-hmm. Mrs. Claus, like Santa All Father or something like that, right?
Exactly. Like, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really cool idea.
They're Silver Surfers to like, this cosmic abstract that is, kindness and giving mm-hmm. that exists yeah. somewhere in the universe.
Yeah. That's yeah. awesome. For Tony, for the art, how fun is it to draw Christmas on every page? Are you sick of the holiday yet? Was it fun for you, or like?
I've been drawing this for a year, so like, yeah. I'm drawing 119 pages. It's going to be about 139 or so.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's a lot of pages.
So I'm almost at the end. So when I started, it was like, what was it? Summer, maybe.
Wow. No, earlier than that. Like I want to say it was like no, I want to say it was like October of last year. Yeah. I think you and I were coming. With the idea, like we were trying to hammer it out last year around the summertime, and then I want to say like around October, November, like I started really getting into the script, and he and I were batting it back and forth, and then December he was like, I remember just like getting texts like, it's almost time, like I really want to be drawing Taff like during this time of year, and it's just like yeah, man, we're gonna get it, and like,
yeah
we were rocking and rolling through that, like, and it has been better part of a year now, so yes.
So awesome. When you're outside, you're outside of the Christmas season doing that, like it's summer, it's like the sun's out, it's 100 degrees, whatever.
Yeah.
Are you just like, did you still have the Christmas decorations up and like blaring Mariah Carey just to get in the mood? Or
it was like Tony Bennett, right? Was it Tony Bennett who wrote that song?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's the book is a Christmas book, but it's a holiday special, but a lot of the book is it's not holiday centric, so there's like mm-hmm. periods in the book where they're like there's a chase with a flying car, and then there's like mm-hmm. a rescue, and there's like him going through a wormhole, and like there is like when he's in the North Pole it's explicitly Christmas, but right. there's other stuff that goes on where it's like robot fights and cool. action and stuff like that. So luckily like it wasn't me drawing like snowflakes in July and
yeah
but yeah there's like, yeah. But, it's like anything else. I don't live in a – I drew the worst dudes for Dark Horse, but I don't live in the weird sci-fi existence where I'm living, with pink cat lion men and stuff like that. So it's like,
so it's just being creative. You have an imagination.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Imagine that.
I didn't want to be like, duh, imagination. I didn't want to do that.
Real quick, Mike, just to jump in here.
Yeah.
Just for Tony on the art. One of the things that popped out to me, like, I know you got a lot of aliens and stuff here. I'm assuming that's a part of the whole Taft mythology. But what really jumps out to me is how you designed Santa in those preview pages on the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? And actually, Dave, to you too, is that part of your, like, you had something to do with it? Or how'd you guys come up with that?
So that Santa that you're seeing on the preview pages is Taft dressed as, like, you know, like the Salvation Army Santa. Mm-hmm. And so he and I were just, like, kicking back and forth, like, well, what do you think? Like what would a Jack Kirby-inspired Santa Claus look like? Because there's, like, this weird idea where he and I were talking where it's just, like, how Santa through the ages has, like, changed with whatever, like, the theme, like, thematically is. Like, the Santa we know and love is, like, the Coca-Cola Santa, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. That's what he, like, that's what he was branded as. That's what he's great. But before that, St. Nicholas. And before that, you know, various other. And so we were kind of thinking about, like, well, what would a, like, Santa Claus in the future be? And it's just like, well, if we're going through all these, like, pop culture references, and you go through, like, comic books and, like, how comic books are like, just the MCU and the DCU and how they're influencing, like, movies and our, and how we, and shows and how we consume our media and things like that, and how they've influenced everything. It's like, well, why wouldn't we have this, like, weird galactic Santa? Because you go back to, like, you know, Jack Kirby and, like, the implementation and his effect on, like, how we consume comic books as a medium and, like, his heavy influence. And so I think that's where we were going with what we wanted Taft Sturgeon to look like when he was his, like, Salvation Army Santa Claus. And then Santa Claus throughout the rest of the book is, like, a little bit more classic, but also cosmic. Like, it's, like, more toned down, but, like, again, back to that, like, kind of Silver Surfer-y feel where there's, like, there's a cosmic entity being who's just, like, because they're multi, I don't want to say multinational, but, like, they exist in a plane where multi facets of people can, pan species can, like, witness them. So it's, like, we see, like a classic Coca-Cola Santa Claus, but, like, this alien sees, you know, some three-eyed dude, or like this, he's a sentient blob, and you know, we started like kicking around like that kind of idea. Like,
oh, that's pretty cool.
And there might be examples of that in the book, like later on.
Oh, nice. That's an interesting way to think about it.
But like Santa, as he shows up, when Taft meets him in the North Pole, he looks a little more like the Coca-Cola Santa that we all know. But a little, like Dave was saying, he's a little more cosmic and a little more alien than. Mm. Than in your, you know.
We were trying to like make a book that if the season wasn't just solely like Earth, right? And like how Christmas as an idea exists throughout the cosmos, and then like all species like celebrate sort of like an end of the year type festivity. Like, you know what I mean? Like
I think that's really cool.
That makes me think of the story years ago. You remember, you know how like recently they've been trying to do like more diverse Santa when they're selling them? So like you can go to Walmart now and buy like black Santa and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. When that first started popping up, I was out shopping and this kid, and we're talking about like 7-8 years old. Like, so innocence of a child in the story, everybody. And I'm just walking by and this kid just points at black Santa and goes, Santa isn't black, and everybody around just like goes hush, and I'm just I have to walk away because I start laughing. Sorry, it made me think of that story.
But I think it goes to like what you said, we're ingrained to know Coca-Cola Santa, right?
But it made me think of like that's true, like people over here, you know, down over in this country might see Santa different than how we see him, and so on and so forth,
right?
And
it, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean he's a mythical figure. You know, it's like any other figure over history that you know.
Yep,
I think almost like Batman. Batman gets rebooted for every generation and every region or religious myths are pretty much the same, but their messianic figures are have different names.
Right,
their origin stories are the same because they just kind of reboot all those stories for
yep
for whoever they need to tell it to. You know.
Yeah. It's like the stories of you can go to churches in different communities. So if you go to like a church in like Chinatown, New York or something, so a Christian church, you'll see like Asian Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are, I need that for my next collection. I collect Jesus's, Chris. So let me know when you see an Asian.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Yeah. I know what to get you for Christmas now.
Yeah. I'm still waiting to get one.
You get so many crucifixes now.
It's easy to display them. You just nail his ass to the fucking wall and walk away.
No, I don't need any more. My mom keeps sending me crucifixes. So I don't need more. So let's talk about the Kickstarter page. The art that you have up to show off the pages, the first five pages is absolutely amazing. The way you split the panels and have like the Christmas wreaths and stuff like that. And like the sci-fi environment in the background, I think it's just a lot of fun with each page. Nice. The characters too. It's a lot of fun to like look at all the characters in the background and things like that. And let's talk about the rewards too, guys. So you have digital, which is like typical.
Mm. I think with the digital, you get like, you can get the first issue that we did back then.
Cool.
The 30-page original Taft Sturgeon.
That's awesome.
Collection. Yeah. And that way, if you want to like just read it digitally to get your feet wet so you kind of understand the world that you're getting into, you can choose to do that.
That's really cool.
And that was something I was curious about, and I'm sure people out there are curious about, like, do they need to read that to understand what's going on here, or do you try to keep this story on its own where it's very understandable for a new reader?
We try to keep it as new reader friendly as possible. Like, there is some talk of like past exploits, like little, a couple name drops, a couple of thises, a couple of thats, but as it's written and as we've developed it, we made it as new reader friendly as possible. So it's like, it's just us returning with a character that he and I love and want to keep telling stories. But like, you know, in the vein of like the pulp, science fiction hero, like you can just pick up a single issue or a single trade paperback or graphic novel and just like jump right in, and you don't really need an origin story because the first book that we were able to tell a story with him, it was us just like developing this character and having fun, and it was very much just like serialized pulp adventure.
Yep. Cool. Very cool.
Oh, you know, we hope that you enjoy it. Like, if you read the preview and then you want to read the thing, then hopefully people will be like, yeah, let me check out where the character came from too. Mm-hmm. And we made it really easy so you can do that and just, you know, look it on your device. You have to get a physical copy. Because I think the first issue is actually really good. I'm proud of it. So I wish I would like people to read it.
It's not bad.
As opposed to the other stuff you guys did together, which is just trash. Which is all shit.
Just all poop. Yeah. Just poop. Content. If you just want content, just go and suck it up. But yeah, we have digital, we have print, we have page rewards. Tony will send you a page of original stuff because he doesn't.
I can't believe the cover is still available, everybody. Original cover art, $300, still one left. That's insane. That's an insane deal for cover art, I think. So.
Yeah, yeah. And you get the book. So you get the cover and the book.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
We got pages. We have some add-ons where Tony will do commissions. We've got our previous library on our add-ons. So if you want like any of the single issues that we don't have in print, we do have access to them in digital. Mm-hmm. We have our trade paperback of Ancient Noise, which was our first series that we did together, which is five issues, 118 pages, about a time-traveling hyper-intelligent gorilla and his companion. Amazing. And dealing with extra-dimensional threats, and like a little bit of body horror, a little bit of dark humor, a lot of science fiction, a lot of wild stuff. But yeah, like we had Layla Del Duca gift us a great sketch card that she illustrated of Taft Sturgeon that was bought up quick, fast in a jiffy.
Yeah.
And, but we're folks who believe that, you know, the reward is the book. Like we don't want to inundate you with tchotchkes and stickers and knickknacks and all sorts of stuff. We just want to get the book to your hands, and then hopefully you'll enjoy it enough to return for the rest of our stuff.
That's awesome. No, it looks fantastic. I'm super excited for it, and I'm super sad the sketch card's gone because that was really good.
Hey, maybe I'll work up some sketch cards.
All right, yeah, okay. There we go. Now we're talking.
We can trick some other people, I'm sure.
I think
you a Blue Beetle and a Booster Gold one, and Michael buy it like.
Oh, man. Hell yeah. Sold.
Have you seen Tony's Blue Beetle and Booster Gold commission?
No, I have
He's
not.
He's done it in the past. It was really great. Yes.
All right. I think you have about 20 days left, 21 days. You're almost halfway there of the 6,000 goal. I think it's super attainable. I hope to see a bump from us when we get this episode.
We've done it before.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. No, I mean, you have the fan base already, right? So that's a lot of content you have in the graphic novel. I think it looks great, and I'm super excited for it. So.
The other books you have that are digital, are those previous Kickstarters as well, other than the Taff book, obviously?
Yes. So we Kickstarted The Adversary. We Kickstarted all of the Ancient Noises, all 5 issues, plus the trade paperback. We Kickstarted Malediction of Maxwell Fitzsimmons as well. And the original Taff Sturgeon. And awesome. So I think we did 7 altogether.
Great.
Yeah.
And
7.
And you sold through all the physicals already?
On some of the books, yes. Like The Adversary and Malediction of Maxwell Fitzsimmons, I think they're all gone. Ancient Noise, I have 1 through 5 in singles, and the trade paperback. And Taff Sturgeon, we still have the volume 1. We still have physical copies of that as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And you can go to my website for that too, davidcristino.com. You can go to my little store, and we've got all sorts of stuff. You can actually get the free, you could get Taff Sturgeon digitally for free at my website currently.
Well, you did the hard work for me. I was going to ask where our listeners and viewers could be following you guys. So, for Dave, it's his website, and for Tony, do you have a website as well?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Tony Gregori, G-R-E-G-O-R-I, and I'm on Instagram. It's Tony, but it's T-O-E-K-N-E-E.
Okay.
Gregori on Instagram. And then I'm on Blue Sky, and I have a Tumblr and all that good stuff. The Tumblr is at Tony Gregori. Yeah, I try to cover as many bases as I can because it seems like social
media. A lot to keep up with.
It. Yeah, it really is. So I got a post on 4 different things just to catch the algorithm. So,
did you guys see it? I posted on all these different things. Nobody saw it? Okay.
Yeah. I'll be talking to somebody. I know.
Dave saw it.
I saw it. I liked it. I shared it. And then my friend Mike saw it and he liked it.
Yeah. There we go.
There you go.
And then Dave's wife works. Will like it and share it. And then.
Hey, you start the chain reaction.
And right. Wives. It's all about the wives and the husbands liking it. And the partners.
Yep. They can lift us up just a little bit.
I cannot find this Booster Gold anywhere. I don't know.
I Googled David Crispino. And apparently you have a doppelganger.
Yeah, he works for LucasArts.
Yeah. So there's an Asian David Crispino who works for LucasArts. And he is best known for, Mike, you're going to love this because it's 3 of the 4 movies that I just wish would die. Uh-huh. He worked on XXX Return of Xander Cage.
Oh, that movie rocked. I love
that. That's my favorite. That's my favorite XXX movie. What do you
think? That's the one I'm out. No, that's the one that I'm not going to say anything bad about because I've never seen it. He worked on Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker.
Wow.
He worked on Justice League. And then he worked on the worst DC movie ever made, Suicide Squad.
The first one?
Which one?
Yes, the original one.
Oh, the David
Not the Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that's not a... Not the best track record for sure.
No.
I think we have the better Dave Crispino in the chat right now. That's what I think.
I don't know. Xander Cage XXX 2 is the Return of Xander Cage is pretty amazing.
I haven't watched that one in a long time. So it was entertaining. It's fun.
That's what's on top is best known for. But then you go through his credits, dude worked on Loki. Dude worked on the Smurfs 2, I guess. He worked on the Harry Potter movies.
I'd love to see David Crispino's thrive. That's
That's what we want to
He's got way better movies than those four. I mean, those three. Right. I don't know about that.
Right. Anyways, it was our friend. It was our friend Danny Scullion who has the Booster Gold Blue Beetle. He's our friend from Scotland.
Oh, he bought it from. It's all the way in Scotland now.
It's all the way in Scotland now.
Oh, it's gone forever.
But I'm gonna see. I'm gonna see if I can find like.
I had colored it, and because I was coloring a bunch of old commissions just out when I had free time recently. Mm-hmm. And I have it somewhere on my hard drive colored, but I don't know where it is. I can't find it. So,
oh man,
and
you guys really
distracted on this.
You guys really got me freaking excited for this Booster Gold shit. Now I'm just like, not any pictures of Booster Gold. Really
disappointed. I will find it on my Instagram probably, but I don't want to be on my device while I'm talking to you guys.
No, it's all good.
It's all good. So, I guess, Dave, I know you talk about your website. Do you also do social media? Do you want to pimp out before I close up?
I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Blue Sky, I'm on Facebook. It's all David Crispino, all of it.
Great.
All right. lots of terrible life decisions made with social media here. I love it.
We're all doing it.
So everybody out there, you know the drill. Show notes, there's links to the Kickstarter, to Dave's website, to any other fun stuff I can find the link that involves these two fine gentlemen. So click on those, check it out. And I promise you will not be disappointed. Dave, Tony, thanks so much for taking the time today. Come chat with us. Really appreciate it. And we look forward to the next time we can do it.
Yeah, thanks for having us. This is really pleasing.
And we're back.
We're back. So check it out on Kickstarter. If you're looking to read a comic that's holiday themed, I would say Taft Sturgeon is the book for you.
So quick tangent right now, because I'm getting a call. And I'm getting sick of these people calling me.
Yep.
So I don't know how, have you ever given blood before?
No.
Okay. So I give blood at the Red Cross.
Okay.
I think it's O positive blood. Like the one that like everybody can fucking use. So
yeah, the good one.
Yeah. So they're always hounding me for blood. So I give blood. But one of the things is this was shocking to me to find out. Because we both live in New York. New York's one of like only five states that doesn't regulate tattoo shops.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like you would think of any state like New York would be
on
top.
Yeah, New York would be into that shit, right? Yeah.
So because of that, you cannot give blood within a 3-month span of getting a tattoo, right?
Yep. Yeah, I did know that.
Yeah. So in any other state, you can do that because it's regulated, so there's no issue.
Oh, interesting.
So I got these done back in September. So it's been a little bit over 3 months.
Yeah.
And they have been hounding me to come in. It's like, at this point, I'm like, if you leave me alone, I'll schedule something.
Right.
But if you keep calling me now, I'm sitting here being like, fuck you guys.
Yeah, I don't want to come. Now you want me to go there? I don't want to go.
I've tried to schedule it, but it's just like, stop fucking calling me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I get it. Like, I get the frustration. I hate that shit.
It's 3:30 on a fucking Sunday. Why are you calling
me? Stop calling me. All right, comic news. Tom Brevoort, our old buddy, old pal, is sending a Substack this week that Avengers Incorporated will be ending with fifth issue. The series was supposed to be an ongoing series, but seems that the sales have lacked, and Marvel has decided to end it after the first story arc, Chris.
Which sucks, because it's a good book. But I get it. Like, it's so niche in every way. Like, it's, and I mean no disrespect because we're talking about original Avenger here, but it's like the Avenger that nobody cares about,
right?
And the Wasp with a partner that nobody cares about in a whirlwind that's taken over by some entity. And it's a fucking noir book.
Yeah, right. That's like not typical.
Yeah, so it's really good. I mean, I wish everybody had picked it up and checked it out, but apparently it's not. So it's going away. I mean, but that happens. So I'm just happy they're letting the first story like go
through. Yeah, they're letting it finish. Yeah.
I mean, Marvel and DC at that have been pretty good recently about doing that, but in the past they have just been like, nope, we're done, and you don't get a conclusion to your story.
Yeah.
So
well, that's because they can sell a trade now if they finish it.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, talking with the Invader guys last week, hopefully y'all listened to that. They were talking about how they, you know, stories need to sit on a shelf for years and not just be throwaway.
Right.
And I think that's something that Marvel and DC are even seeing now, that, like, you know, maybe, I mean, Marvel's been really good about having trades out for everything, but maybe getting a trade, we can break even or even make something off this down the line. But
yeah.
Yeah, it yeah, sucks, we'll but, you know, it is what it is.
On Chip Zdarsky's Substack, he discussed that Sex Criminals is about to celebrate its 10th anniversary. Chip also mentioned that he recently got to draw the characters again and that we would get more details about that soon.
Did you ever read Sex Criminals?
I think I read the first couple issues. I remember it being really good, and then I dropped off.
That's on my shame list. So yeah. I want to read that.
That's one where they have sex and it stops time, right?
Yeah, and then they commit crimes.
Commit crimes, yeah.
Sex criminals.
Yep.
But that's one where, so I didn't really know who Chip was when that was coming out. So I didn't have my Chip fandom yet.
Yeah.
And I was not a Matt Fraction guy. Like, his Marvel stuff was okay, but right. I was not into his stuff. So never checked it out. But now, being a Chip Uber fan, I'm like, I gotta see what this book's about. And everyone around me tells me how great it is. So down the line, I'll check it out. It's cool that it's coming back, because I know people really like that book. Yeah. And I was reading about it. So it goes 31 issues, I think it was. But the 31st issue is actually issue 69.
Nice.
I love. And then they put out a supplementary book called Just the Tips.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah.
I love how they do that. Yeah, I know. I do remember the marketing was on point with that, with like the sexy covers they had hidden too and stuff like that.
Yeah, and actually, I should be doing my job right now. But here we go. Here we go, Mike. One second. I'm not paying attention. So, yeah, there's Avengers Inc. right there, right?
Oh, yeah. We got the covers here, everybody. Yeah.
And then I pulled up my favorite sexy cover right here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was amazing.
Which I'm pretty sure, so this is issue 20. This is around the time Chip's doing Howard the Duck, too. So hence
even better.
Yeah.
I love it.
Good stuff, yeah.
That's so good.
I want to check this book out. I will check this book out at some point. Maybe 2024 is the year, because 10th anniversary, and I'm sure there'll be some cool reprints of it.
Yeah, they'll be coming out with an omnibus for it or some shit.
Yep, no more omnibuses, Mike. No more.
During the CCXP convention, it was announced that Geoff Johns and Ivan Reis are teaming up again for a new Ghost Machine title. The series is called Hyde Street and was pitched to the crowd as Blackest Night's Fantastic Scope with Twilight Zone's thought-provoking drama. So I guess that's like what Ghost Machine is going to be, is like a Twilight Zone-esque universe where there's all these weird stories going on in one universe, maybe.
It's well, because Geiger's a part of it.
Yeah, Geiger's part of it,
and then Junkyard, Red Coat,
Junkyard Joe.
This, so it seems like, well, for one, it seems like Geoff Johns being like, all of his friends who helped make him successful at DC, like, hey, come work with me, and we'll own our shit now.
Yeah.
It's really weird, because I'm like, I'm sitting back. I think at this point, I'm like, why is this a universe? But I do remember, right. I think it was it the end of Junkyard Joe, where like Geiger comes through a portal? Fucking,
yes. Yep. And he's like, hey.
Yeah. Like fucking Avenger style. Be like, yeah. Join our team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey. So there's obviously some sort of crossover here, but there is a part of me that's like, why are these things connected? Why aren't they just like books?
They're connected, Chris, because the artist was told to draw Geiger at the end.
Yeah.
She was coming through a portal. Yeah. Yeah.
Because John just wants to get the fucking universe together, which, I mean, good for him. I've been enjoying all this, with the exception of the Geiger Ground Zero, which I still
It says Hyde Street on that cover, right? Yeah.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought this one, I mean, I'm going to pick it up, because I've been enjoying the Ghost Machine stuff even before we knew it was Ghost Machine.
Yeah.
And I fucking love Ivan Reis.
Yeah. Oh my God. The art is so good.
But like this image right here and how they kind of described it, I'm like, this is gonna be a Mike ass book right
oh,
here.
Oh hell yeah, dude. Look at that shit. That looks terrifying and I love it. Yeah. I love Twilight Zone, I love Blackest Night. Like, come on.
I mean, I do like Twilight Zone, but I like it for different reasons.
Yeah.
I like the anthologiness of it where it's like, how do we connect these things that aren't connected?
Right.
And I don't feel like that's what this book's going to be. I think it's going to be like a, it's obviously going to be some sort of like pseudo zombie book.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
Some sort of zombie ship with like serial killers. I don't know.
Yeah. They're hyping up this Ghost Machine one shot, which I'm pretty sure I pre-ordered. I better have. And I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
But
can't wait to see what it brings. Yeah. All right. Well, we read this week, Chris. I caught up on JSA 7. I know you talked about it last week.
How about that ending?
Like you said, you know, they're trying to recruit more people. And then, bam, Legion of Superheroes shows up and asks Dr. Fate to help. And mentions a Red Lantern, right? I think.
Yeah, which has got to be the...
Which has got to be from Alan Scott Green Lantern number 2.
Are you reading that book? Because I don't think you talked about that one.
So I did read 1 and 2. So I guess we'll jump in there because really great series so far. I don't know what you've thought about it.
I haven't read it.
Oh, okay. Dude, it focuses on Alan Scott, like his origin and like the fact that he's had like one of the guys that he fell in love with in the army. Like it's really sad because the first issue focuses on him, like he's in like conversion therapy because they didn't believe in like people being gay back then. So he's like in a mental institute for part of it where they're like doing electric shock therapy and stuff on him. So like he's dealing with that. He like makes a friend.
There's a huge retcon right there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, this is the Alan Scott from the, which one was it? The Earth 2. Yeah.
Well, so they made New 52 Alan Scott gay,
mm-hmm.
but that was a whole new character. And then they made this one, like the regular Alan Scott, the old one. They had him come out. I forget what the thing was, but he came out to his kids or something. Yeah. But like the whole story was that he was closeted for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and he like had a like shit going on the side, like
right.
But for him to be kind of open in the army, that's
no, he's not. He's not open in the army. They're hiding it.
Well, yeah, but they have to know about it. So like obviously he's
no, open. The army doesn't know about it. It's well,
who's giving him electroshock therapy then?
This is after the fact. So like him and his lover are like on this ship for a long time and then it gets attacked and he checks himself into he thinks there's something wrong with him after that because the guy he loves goes missing because of this red flame, this inferno flame they're investigating. So he checks himself in and then he gets like stuck there and they start like giving him electric shock therapy because he's like, I can leave whenever I want. I check myself in because obviously I have something wrong with me. Like he thinks he has something wrong with him and then they don't let him leave. It's like really fucked up.
So are they giving him the therapy because he saw some fucking weird shit in the sky or because he's gay?
Because he's gay.
Oh, okay. So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so like they talk about that. And it goes through a few different timelines and like the current one, he's like investigating this red flame thing that's going around and it happens to be a Red Lantern is going around impersonating him and like killing people. So it's like these, honestly, these first two issues go really well together if you read them back to back. But I think Tyler Sheridan's doing a great job, like handling the character.
Tim Sheridan.
Yeah. Is doing a great job handling the character. I think it's I think there's some really good stories going on here, and it's honestly made Alan Scott a lot more interesting to me with this series.
Can I just real quick?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first series where we're going to delve into Alan Scott's homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Was it really a good decision to make his villain somebody who has flame powers? Just saying.
Yeah, and call them the Crimson Flame. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just throwing it out.
I didn't think about that, but they were. Yeah, it was two gay men investigating the Crimson Flame in the ocean. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. There is a joke to be had there, but
always looking for the joke, Mike.
I know, always. But it is really good. I thought you were reading it. I think you would really like these first two issues. I think it's a good way to handle the character.
Yeah, it comes down to nothing else other than I'm trying to buy less books.
Yeah, that's really what it's at. So back to that, I think that's why the Legion shows up in JSA to ask where Red Lantern is. Now we get into something really confusing, Chris, because like Geoff Johns is like, okay, we're gonna have the Legion show up in JSA and be like, where's the Red Lantern, and then have this guy who's like a Red Lantern in Alan Scott book start terrorizing people, and it's like, you know, you gotta have everybody read this. I'll read these books separately to keep up with what's going on, or what?
Yeah, which is weird because like I am reading the Wesley Dobbs book, and it seems to really not tie in at all.
Now I'm wondering, because we have like an evil Lantern and we have an evil Wesley Dodds in his book, are we gonna get like just a like an anti JSA? Like all the
I think we're gonna get us like a Legion, what do they call them? Legion of Doom.
Legion style. Of Doom. JSA, yeah. Legion of Doom.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you hear what happened in the Green Lantern, like the regular Green Lantern book?
No.
So Sinestro's trying to get his like his ring back, and apparently he was like so full of rage that now he's a Red Lantern.
Oh my god.
So like they're going heavy on Red Lantern stuff right now.
Everybody's a Red Lantern.
Yeah. I have a feeling we're gonna have a big like Red Lantern thing coming up in the next couple of years.
Oh, like an event or something.
Yeah. Because they're really pushing Red Lanterns right now.
I think Red Lanterns are cooler than Yellow Lanterns, to be honest.
I liked when they did the Red Lantern book back in New 52. Like, I love that book. It was a blast.
Yeah. I really liked it too. And it's like, you know, yeah, Maggie's joining the podcast this afternoon, everybody. She just is very needy today. Yeah, but I am enjoying Alan. Long story short, I'm liking JSA. I'm also liking Alan Scott Green Lantern. I highly recommend both of them.
So I know you're reading Wesley Dobbs. You're reading Alan Scott. Are you also reading? You did read Jay Garrick too, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay, so you're the whole sweep.
Yeah, I read them all. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I know you weren't a fan of the first volume of Batman 89, but the new one came out this week, 89 Echoes. So it's by Hamm and Quinones on the art again, same team. I thought it was a great first issue. We're in the 90s now, Chris, like early 90s. So there's a lot of that style of like cars and outfits and things like that. Barbara Gordon is the commissioner now in this universe, but basically, Jesus Christ.
Finally, Mike's suffering through the cat.
The cat just like ripped the headphones out of my head. So basically, Barbara Gordon is the commissioner in this universe, and she, like, before Commissioner Gordon dies, he like tells her that he knows, well, everything he knows about Batman, and then she figures out Batman's Bruce Wayne, so she goes to his house and is like, "Hey, I'm the commissioner. I know you're Batman. You need to stop being Batman," and he disappears for like 2 years. She's like, "I won't turn you in unless you like keep being Batman." So he stops and he disappears for 2 years. Someone is going around and like infecting criminals so there's been like some Batman impersonators, and when these criminals see them, they freak out and like brutally murder these guys, like shoot them and like can't stop shooting them, like they're scared of them. Well, come to find out, we see a Dr. Crane is working in Arkham, the Scarecrow. So there's a couple things happening in this story that are really interesting. You have Harley Quinn, but it's Dr. Quinzel working with Dr. Crane in Arkham before she like goes crazy. And you can see they have like a really combative relationship. And then you have,
I heard she's very Madonna-esque as well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's a good way to put her. And then we have Bruce. So like part of the issue follows Firefly gets caught in the woods, but he like gets caught on his own, like purposely. Well, it is Bruce Wayne. Like he came out of hiding is getting caught by the police, and then he gets put in an Arkham, and is face to face with Dr. Crane. So like he's been missing. He probably made the connection that these people are dying because of Crane. So he gets himself pulled into Arkham. It was a really good issue, honestly. I think I'm going to enjoy this series way. I wish we like sped up to this point, because like being in the 90s, I think that Batman 89 universe is interesting. And I think what they did, Chris, is they went like the Batman White Knight, where they brought in way more characters.
Yeah.
Which I think is the way to do it, because last time we had like that, we just had Harvey Dent and that was it.
Well, I stand by. I mean, so the first volume didn't gel with me, whatever. Yeah, but right. I stand by that it's a cool idea to take the like what they did with Batman 66, where they brought in Two-Face, and they're like, well, if we were to do Two-Face back in 66, who would it be? Bam Bam, Will Shatner. Like, yep. And now with this, it's like, well, in the 90s, who would play Harley Quinn? Madonna. Or that's like, that would be the dream casting.
Yeah, least, that you're right. Yeah, it would be. Yep.
So I like that they're doing that. Like, that's cool. And the people who enjoy it, I hope they really enjoy it. Just, you know. And maybe I'd like this one, not and just the first one didn't vibe with me. Or, yeah. You know.
You might just open this one and be like, oh, this is way more interesting than. Yeah. But
it wasn't so, it wasn't like awful. Like, I thought it was the worst. It could be one of those things where I could open it up 2 months from now and be like, oh, this is actually really good. Like,
yeah.
You know, it just didn't vibe with me at the time. I didn't want to continue with it.
No, I get it. Yep. Yeah. Batman Beyond Neo Gothic number 5.
Fucking right, you read that.
Yeah, the last issue before the end. One more, I think. And Lanzig Kelly on this book. Yeah. So we find out who the three swamp people are. One of them's Black Mercy, the like mind invading plant from Superman universe, Swamp Thing, and Poison Ivy. So we find like Constantine is enveloped with like all of them and been the one like stealing children and shit. He's way far gone, but he also said there's a crisis coming. So man, it's been a while since we've had a DC crisis. And then you mentioned the word crisis. I want to be like, come on, Lanzig, really? Are you like doing that as like a joke or? Yeah, that was kind of funny to hear that.
Yeah. My big problem there is like, I don't know, it depends what he does, what they do
right
with the next volume, but like they haven't talked about the Justice League Beyond. So
right.
Are they around right now? Like, are they a thing?
Yeah.
Cause like, I don't listen. I love Terry. I love Batman Beyond to death, but like Terry ain't taking down a crisis.
Well, maybe that's a good point, Chris, because this issue ends with Gotham pretty much like blown up and all the villains coming out of the underground, which Batman might need some help taking down. So maybe the Justice League shows up.
Which would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be a great way to end the book and be like, here's our next project, like Justice League Beyond or something.
Yeah, I do love this issue. And then like the, I forget the dude's name, but the guy who was creating the light tower.
Yeah, Luminescence. I forget his name.
Yes. So he shows up and I kind of like, I get the feeling that they're going to twist his villain arc to be like, he had to do villainous things to get to the right conclusion.
Right.
Like ends justify the means kind of thing.
Yep.
And while I morally disagree with that, like I like that bent on it, and I could see him now being like a part of the Bat team.
Yeah. Right. You know, maybe he wasn't so bad.
Yeah. Like maybe he had the right idea. He just went about it the wrong way.
It was like a Luther type character.
Exactly. The issue altogether is awesome, and I can already tell we're getting one more issue. We didn't talk about the head, but like they did that Spotify thing that everybody's been talking about, and we got ours for the show.
Yeah,
and wild guess who our biggest show was, and it was Jackson Lanzig. So I'll be hounding him to come back to see when the fuck we're getting more Batman Beyond, even though it's not done yet.
Yeah, we need to talk to him about that for sure.
But 100% I can tell, like, they have more stories in mind. Like,
oh yeah.
At this point, the way the story's structured, they're at least penciled in for another volume.
They have to be, yeah.
Yeah.
It's too good.
So, awesome book. Awesome.
And then the last one I got to this week, I roped you into reading Titans Beast World. I put it down. I'm like, Chris, you need to fucking read this book. So we do know it's Tom Taylor doing it. Ivan Reyes on the art. So the art's amazing. At the header of this, I put "What a freaking issue." Yeah, the way you get me interested in a Titans book is you start off with a giant zombie Starro, called the Necro Star, basically hiding in the Titan, which is the moon of, it's, I don't know, the moon of one of the planets. But Starfire's people had hidden this Necro Star in the planet because you can't destroy it. Beast Boy's like, well, maybe I can turn into a Starro to fight it, and like everybody starts getting infected. So he starts infecting people with the Starros to like release them. It was insane. So him and Cyborg like defeat the Necro Star, boom, tube it away, and then Dr. Hate shows up, and Dr. Hate was a character that came from Night Terrors, created by Amanda Waller to take out the Titans. We know this, and like all the other metahumans. So he like literally destroys Beast Boy's mind. He still is a Starro and starts infecting everybody on Earth. And as he's infecting them, they're all starting to turn into beasts. So we have these crazy beast like superhero hybrids. And that's where we leave the issue. And I was like, holy shit, man, Tom Taylor is just fucking insane. Yeah, so this is like straight out of Night Terrors. I mean, we have a little bit of overlap from Night Terrors, not straight out of Night Terrors, but I thought it was a great first issue. I'm super pumped for what comes next.
Yeah, as a single issue, it was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
Dude, he's just doing like the fucking fan service of like Tom Taylor's like, what would be cool to do? Well, if Beast Boy turned into a Starro and then infected everybody, but they're also beasts too. Like, why not?
Yeah. So here's my nitpicks on it. One, I'm worried that this is a premature ejaculation situation where like we've got this amazing first issue that did all these cool things and then it kind of twists at the end to give us the story.
Yep.
And like, will I continue to enjoy it to this level? That's my first.
Yeah.
Which we'll just see. I don't have an answer for that. My one big nitpick is there's a line in here where like, first I didn't realize that everybody like is Beast Boy like an idiot. Because everybody treats him like an idiot in this.
Yeah, that's kind of what it seems like.
Like, it almost seems like he's, like, brain dead or something, because everybody's like, well, can he handle that? Like, it's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't read Titans, so that's why I don't know this. But there's this moment where, like, Beast Boy has a plan, and the plan is to become Giant Starro and fight it. But he has a plan, and everybody's just, like, kind of laughing at him. Mm-hmm. And then Nightwing stands up for him, and Batman's just like, well, it's your team. So, like,
right,
you make the decision. My problem here is like, we're talking about the Teen Titans. We're talking about Batman.
Right.
Where like, it should have gone like, all right, kids, like the adults are going to handle it now.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah, let Batman handle
it. It's a nitpick, but like, that one scene bugged me for a minute. I'm like, that's not what would happen. Like, especially the way they were treating Gar the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But like, awesome issue outside of that nitpick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I thought it was fantastic. That was the last thing I got to this week.
So you didn't read Barbaric, Wrong Kind of Righteous?
No, I did not read it.
So I didn't realize it was a one shot. So it's a long read, yeah. Okay. But it's really good. So basically he runs into this guy who has a mace that can talk. And this guy he's not really a crusader, but he's a crusader. Like they don't really go into like he's like hardcore, like gonna kill all the sinners, but like you know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what this dude is. Like he goes around and he has this god that he's worshiping. And he goes to town and basically like kills anybody that's going against the god in ways. And like, he's so crazy that like you like looking at the sun for too long goes against his god and you've sinned. So you must die.
Yeah.
And it's a battle between these two and like Owen kind of figuring out like, oh, like this dude's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's insane. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so awesome. It's a really fun, like just one shot issue. I really enjoyed it. If you like Barbaric, it's a lot of fun.
That sounds cool.
Some from last week were Plot Holes number 4, which is really good. I think this book's just a ton of fun. Sean Gordon Murphy art. You talked about it, but Superman number 8 from last week.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of loved how they tied in Superboy to the villain and all that. It's a really good issue.
Void Rivals number 6. So we kind of got that there's going to be some sort of uprising and that there's more to these two factions that live on this planet than we might know about. And also that, like, that junkyard dealer that they sold their ship to, he ends up selling the ship to somebody that's also connected to the planet and is like been trying to figure out how to get there. Mm-hmm. So now they're really tying. It felt like for the first 5 issues, like this dude just shows up randomly. And now like it makes sense as to why they were so focused on this dude throughout it. And then last one from last week was Black Hammer, the end number 4. It's Black Hammer Crisis on Infinite Earths. I mean, yeah. What's cool about this issue is that at the end, so the female Black Hammer from the end of the series, she's on our world now. So a world that's separate from the Paraverse.
Mm-hmm.
And her daughter had found out that like all their adventures were part of a comic series, and they found out that the guy writing the comic was Colonel Weird. But they don't know which Colonel Weird. So they go to find him. And when they get there, they find the parallel Black Hammer that's been going around killing all the Black Hammers.
Oh.
Is there. And that's how the issue ends. So it was a really cool kind of reveal at the end.
Interesting.
Yeah, really, really enjoying that. The last issue of 007 for King and Country came out. I'll say, I mean, these 007 books are fun. If you like 007, check them out. This one's really good. They all feel like James Bond movies at heart. Like
that's awesome.
There's not a whole ton there. It's the typical, like, he gets into a skirmish, he bangs some chick, he gets into another skirmish, and then they conclude the story. Like, yeah. There's not a whole ton here, but it's just a ton of fun. The Schlub number 4 came out.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got our superhero character is, we find out that he's like the son of this guy who runs this galactic empire, and his dad wants him like take over the family business, kind of tying back into an earlier conversation we had.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have switched bodies, so the guy's like trying to basically like flub his way through it and get out of it, and it leads to him like basically screwing over this guy because his dad gets really mad that he goes back home and basically decides he's going to invade Earth. Meanwhile, the Superman character who's in the regular guy's body has to go to a family dinner and realizes like how shitty this guy's family is. And you find out like his family is all like really rich and like powerful people.
Yeah.
And they treat him like shit.
That's funny.
So it was a cool kind of back and forth there. I think this book's a blast. I mean, cool. I really do recommend it. And then digitally, what I read. Oh, so I read The Devil That Wears My Face number 2 that comes out this week, I believe.
Yep.
And, or no, it already did come out. And it's not a great issue. People can go back to our interview with David to hear more about it. But I just really love that book. I like how he continued the story in this issue, and the art continues to be phenomenal. And then I was sent issues 1 and 2 of Not Tested on Animals, which I believe should still be on Kickstarter when this launches.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really cool book. It's about like science gone wrong. They're testing on these animals. We find out this guy's trying to create these like human animal hybrids and he's successful. But when it happens, like his plant blows up and then one goes rogue and is trying to kill everybody.
Oh boy.
So yeah. And then my last thing was Death Note Black Edition Volume 5, Volume 4, sorry, which has Volume 7 and 8 of the manga in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're past kind of the main villain here, and we're introducing a new villain. All in all, I'm told that this is kind of the turning point for the book where it kind of gets not so great.
Mm-hmm.
I did still really like this volume. Like, we get into kind of more multinational stuff where like the president's involved, the United States, and all this shit. So it gets a little bit more like crazy.
Yeah.
But it still continues to be a great book.
Cool.
I got to pick up the next volume, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Nice.
Mike, that was everything I read this week. So where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on pretty much all social media networks.
and also at Chris Comics Corner at .substack.com. And you can find the show at Fortress Comics _ on Twitter or at fortresscomicnews.com, where everything's right there on that handy website. If you want to support the show, 5-star reviews on Podcatchers. Like, subscribe, share, comment down below on YouTube. And you can go to Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week. We'll see you here next week.